In your bulletin today, you have an orange sheet that you're going to need to have handy as we share in the message translation of Isaiah 9 in a few minutes. In your pew Bibles, if you like the translation of Isaiah 9, on page 707, I'll read just one verse, Isaiah 9, 6. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. I don't know where these prophetic words take you. When I hear these words during the Advent season of each year, it takes me to Southern California. Sandy and I, pre-children, 600-foot condo, nice and clean, white walls. Warm December mornings, BB and CC Winans playing in our CD player, the sultry sounds of their Christmas CD. Born unto us a child is born. Ah. Which just goes to show you how far we can be off from the context of our scriptures. I was thinking of that this week. Isaiah is this prophet who doesn't have the privilege of living in Southern California. He's not even a North American, right? He's another no-name prophet in this line of prophets, Moses, Abraham, Elijah, and even last week's country bumpkin prophet, Amos. We don't hear of a great family heritage. It's quite possible that Isaiah was actually a janitor in the temple of the Lord before his first call. So that gives us all hope as future prophets. You don't have to be spectacular or famous to be a prophet. So he doesn't prophesy from a position of power or prestige or pedigree. He seems to be this ordinary prophet, unknown, unheralded. And that seems to be the context for prophets. And you'll notice that in these weeks, the last couple of weeks, and for the next few weeks, we're continuing in the prophets. And they often operate from very meager means, pretty humble places. They show up in times of calamity, and today's story is no different. God's promises are once again in jeopardy. The divided kingdom of Israel and Judah continue to crumble. God's people have disobeyed, they've fallen into disarray, swept and swooned away by idol worship. It's 740 BCE, and God's people in the southern kingdom of Judah are being oppressed and abused by the empire. And at this time, the empire is the Assyrians. King Ahaz is this failed king, this failed leader. He steered away the people of God from worshiping the one true God to many other gods. And we read in Isaiah 8 that people have consulted the familiar spirits that chirp and mutter. The familiar spirits that chirp and mutter. We read they will pass through the land. They will have no dawn. Greatly distressed and hungry, they will be enraged and will curse their king and their gods. They will turn their faces upward, seeing only distress and darkness, the gloom of anguish, and they will be thrust into thick darkness. This is the historical context of the salvation song that we read of today. And it seems so far away from my cozy condo life in California, or even 20 years later, it seems so far away from this life I live even in Edmonton. And so there's some work for us to do as the hearers once again, to get into the context of this salvation song. This isn't a people who have their act together. This is a salvation song for people in darkness, people in anguish. And I wonder what our proximity is to darkness and anguish in these days. Perhaps some of us are really close. Maybe we're not too far away from a story of struggle and woe. And if we pause to ponder our place in this world, I think we all have certain amounts of sadness and sorrow that swirl around in the midst of our seemingly happy lives. You've heard me use that ancient proverb before, be kind, because everyone you meet is in the midst of a great struggle. And so individually and corporately, we know of those who are in seasons of oppression and anguish. We've prayed even this morning, remembering those who are struggling in the wake of this typhoon. Perhaps we look around even our continent and think of bankrupt cities like Detroit that were once so glorious and now are in ruin. And we too in Edmonton have bankrupt and broken places, and many in this congregation work alongside people who are trying to alleviate poverty. And for us as a downtown church, I think even anguish and sorrow are just a church stairwell away, either in the front or in the back. So that's the work we need to do to try and hear the good news of this salvation song this morning. A couple of weeks ago, I noted that we as the people of God are in our own kind of captivity, our own kind of exile. We're no longer, as a church, at the center of society. And we speak to our culture, we speak to our neighborhood, we speak to our communities, not from positions of power and expertise, but we speak from pretty meager places as well. This prophetic voice. And so let's stand with this outsider prophet Isaiah. And let's too realize that we're outsiders. And yet we can try to echo the words of this prophet. Some people call Isaiah, the whole 65 chapter unit, the Salvation Symphony. And so in the midst of cries of anguish and despair, and maybe in the midst of even grief or frustration or darkness or sorrow that we bring into the house of the Lord today, let us hear anew this salvation song from Isaiah. A message to the people of God 2,700 years ago, and yet a message to us as God continues to work out his gracious work with us, for us, even though we are fickle and flawed people. This blue-collared prophet speaks, but, he says, there will be no gloom for those who were in anguish. In the former time, God brought judgment, but in the latter time, God brings glory. Away in the desert, we read in Isaiah, streams in the wasteland. And in the midst of these themes of judgment, Isaiah always weaves in glimpses of comfort and words of hope. And so in the midst of judgment, there's this good news, this news that seems too good to be true. And so together, I thought we could read and declare this salvation song. And so I'll invite you to pull out your orange litany or salvation song, and Verlin's going to help me voice this. I was reading Walter Brueggemann, the Old Testament scholar, this week, and he calls Isaiah the most vigorous, daring, and imaginative voice of faith during the exile. And so then Brueggemann invites us to read the scriptures, to read the prophets as a way of doing what he calls liturgical rehearsal, so that we might read these words, read these promises, read of these hope, and then also have them in our imaginations, our hearts, and even today in our mouths. So then as we go into a broken world this week, we might carry these words in our hearts and our mouths, our minds. So let's read together the salvation song. There's a place for y'all to shout out. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light.
For those who lived in a land of deep shadows,
light, sunbursts of light.
You repopulated the nation. You expanded its joy. Oh, they're so glad in your presence.
Festival joy.
The joy of a great celebration, sharing rich gifts and warm greetings.
The abuse of oppressors and cruelty of tyrants, all their whips and weapons and curses.
Gone, done away with. A deliverance as surprising and sudden as Gideon's old victory over Midian.
The boots of all those invading troops, along with their shirts soaked with innocent blood, will be piled in a heap and burned, a fire that will burn for days.
For a child has been born for us,
the gift of a son for us. He'll take over the running of the world.
His names will be
Amazing Counselor,
Strong God,
Eternal Father,
Prince of Wholeness.
His ruling authority will grow, and there'll be no limits to the wholeness he brings.
He'll rule from the historic David throne over that promised kingdom.
He'll put that kingdom on a firm footing and keep it going. With fair dealings and right living, beginning now and lasting always.
The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do all this.
This too is the word of the Lord. How do we, as the people of God this morning, a people who are at varying places of darkness or anguish or struggle, hear these proclamations and promises? The gracious good news is that Isaiah is declaring that even in the midst of God's judgment, that God never ends with, "I told you so." Isaiah's words, as I've said, are swirled in with judgment, but there's these themes that keep on coming forth. Comfort, comfort, O my people. Or a verse of promise like, "Those who wait and hope in the Lord shall renew their strength." This God with us, this God for us, this God who, as I've said in the past, is the protagonist in the God story, leading the way. Leading the way into a future where we don't have to manufacture it in our own strength, but a future that's in God's good, gracious, and generous hands. And so I hope we get a message here that we can also live out. Because how might we live as the people of God who are trying to live in this space, in this world of these prophetic texts? Next week, we'll hear from Jeremiah. Tana's going to preach about Jeremiah and how he told the people in exile to hunker down, to dwell, to live. But for us this morning, I want us to sit with these words that we've read, Amazing Counselor. Wisdom, discernment in those words. Strong God, this God of power. Eternal Father, from everlasting to everlasting, this God reigns. I was thinking of that Christian mystic, Julian of Norwich, 13th century mystic, who said this one prayer, "It was necessary that there should be sin, but all shall be well. And all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well." Prince of Wholeness. There's no chaos here. The darkness is being pushed back. New light and life is emerging. These are good news for a people who have lost their way. We are invited and beckoned to be this people of wisdom and strength and wholeness. And even in verse 7, we take a cue from a God who keeps on getting the kingdom ways done on earth. And as the Message translation puts it, with fair dealings and right living, beginning now and lasting always. And I want us to remember and be propelled by the last verse of today's salvation song. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do all this. This isn't to be done in our own power. Yes, there's work for us to do, but the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do all this. If you turn the salvation song page, you see that Isaiah 33 is on the back. And I thought Isaiah 33, again in the Message translation, gives us some practical to-dos in the midst of following this God whose zeal is on the move. And Isaiah, as he bounds 24 chapters ahead to Isaiah 33, he's still finding himself marveling at God's words of comfort and hope swirled in the midst of judgment. And he asks, who can live with a God who moves like this? A God who moves like a firestorm? Who of us can get out of this purge with our lives? And Isaiah answers his rhetorical question with what he puts as a simple answer. The answer's simple. Live right. Speak the truth. Despise exploitation. Refuse bribes. Reject violence. Avoid evil amusements. This is how you raise your standard of living. A stable way to live. A nourishing, satisfying way to live. So even as we sit with this salvation song and this, what Isaiah is calling a simple answer, I want to give us just 30 or 40 seconds to sit in silence with the song, with these exhortations from Isaiah, recognizing that this is not to be done in our own strength, but to pay attention to where we see the zeal of the Lord at work. So I want to give you just a half a minute or 45 seconds to prayerfully sit and be still, to allow God to speak to you and to draw your attention to where his zeal is at work even now, and how this week you might join in individually or us corporately. How might we join in with this God who calls us to live right, to speak truth, to despise exploitation, to refuse bribes, to reject violence, avoiding evil amusements. I'll give you 30 or 40 seconds to sit with this song and these exhortations, and then I'll close with this prayer that's also on the back of your handout, a prayer that I hope you'll carry with you this week, and maybe you'll pin it up on your fridge or put it in your bathroom mirror as a prayer of justice as we continue to hear the words of the prophets and live out the words of the prophets in these days. God, may we be a people of justice. May we humble ourselves and be willing to learn from each other. May we stand on the side of the oppressed. May we not be silent. May we call out your image in others. May we be brave on behalf of our friends. May we bring your kingdom to earth now. May we be known as those crazy people who stick up for the underdog even when people think we've gone off the deep end. May we let your spirit compel us to act, to love, to learn, to speak, to move, to sacrifice. On behalf of our brothers and our sisters next to us today, on behalf of those who have gone before us, and on behalf of those who will come after us. On your behalf, Jesus, as your ambassadors, with your humility, your courage, your spirit as our guide. And the people of God said, Amen.